All right, we're here at the Boston Marathon Public Garden, April 15, 2024. What am I thinking? I'm all discombobulated. 8:45 a.m. walking to our bus. I'm here with my good friend Tim and my awesome friend Missy. We're running Boston together. Tim is here. First, Tim. Who are we fundraising for again? So maybe we could tell them.
It was Spalding Rehabilitation Hospital. Uh-huh. And our team is called Race for Rehab.
And how are you feeling about this Boston Marathon? It's our second one. Your second one, excuse me.
Well, you know, it is also tax day, so I just want to make sure that everybody got their 1040s in, filed their state taxes, you know, being the good tax-paying citizens that we are. That's really the first thing on my mind.
To remind my tax guy to make sure he files. Okay, thank you. Misty, how about you?
First question.
How are you feeling?
Nervous, but excited.
Same here. Okay, that's it for audio here. We'll regroup a little bit later on today. Thanks. Bye.
Welcome to another episode of Three Slow Guys Running Marathons. This is our post-Boston Marathon edition with Tim and Missy. We're recording this 6 days, so Sunday, April 21st, after the marathon, which occurred on Monday, April 15, Patriots Day. So I'll ask you guys first. So Tim or Missy, or whoever wants to go first, how was your Boston experience? Maybe a quick sentence to kind of sum it up for the group. What did you guys think about that whole event? So maybe I'll go to Missy first, since it's your first time running it. What are your thoughts, Missy? So.
In one sentence, I would say it was an amazing once in a lifetime experience.
Yeah. Tim?
I would say Boston, there's just there's a vibe, there's sort of an energy, just as the whole city is giving off the moment you arrive. I think I turned to Missy, when we were, on race day, we're waiting for you in the Boston Common. I just said, this is big. Like, this feels big. Like, yeah, this is just, this is something else.
Yeah. My thoughts are, like, and I mentioned this to you guys, to Tim already, but like equating to sports, it feels like for running, like bigger than the NBA finals or maybe on par with like a Super Bowl, but like bigger than an NBA finals and maybe bigger than one World Series game. It felt like that's the culmination of like all these people running. Now, I know we didn't qualify on time, but it just felt like it was so electric kind of just being there. So, okay, Missy, I'll start off with you first. So when did you get into town for the race? And did you do any activities kind of like pre-run, any sightseeing, any places you wanted to go, that kind of thing?
So I got in Friday night. It seemed like the flight from SFO to Boston pretty much had all runners on that flight. And so I got in Friday night and then I hit the expo Saturday. And then I did walk up and down Newberry Street because there's so much going on pretty much at every store, especially all the running related stores on Newberry Street. And then I had walked back to my hotel just to drop stuff off. And that's when I saw you and Jen on the bridge.
Yeah. Right.
The only other thing we did was my sister's boyfriend is a huge New Balance fan. So we Ubered to New Balance Corporate, which has a store, right? So went there and then ended up back at kind of Boylston to drop off my stuff at the Mandarin Oriental. So not a lot of sightseeing because I've been to Boston a few times before, but definitely cool on Newberry Street on Saturday and Sunday.
Now, where's the New Balance store or the factory or wherever you guys
were? Tim, you might know best, but it's definitely on the outskirts because I think it was like a 10 or 15 minute Uber ride out, and it's massive. The whole like New Balance Corporate is this massive building, and at the bottom of the building is like a store. And then if you walk two or three blocks from there is actually a New Balance factory outlet too. So there's a store and then there's an outlet a few blocks away.
Okay. Yeah. Did you buy anything from New Balance?
I did not. I'm actually not a New Balance fan, but I might be going forward.
Oh man. I know it's not that, it's not as popular as like Nike or even Brooks that we run in, but oh, that's interesting. Okay. So Tim, when did you get in? And did you do any activities kind of like pre-race day?
So I got in Friday morning. I had the luxury of living on the East Coast, so it's only an hour flight up for me from Washington up to Boston. And immediately went over to the expo thinking that, okay, I'm going over Friday morning after it opens, so I'll beat the crowds. And that certainly was not the case, because it was a mob scene over at the expo. And, you know, got my number pretty quick. But when I went in to, you know, buy some things, where all the swag, all the shirts, all the tops, the jackets were, it was just like, I felt like I was at Disney World. It was just absolutely jam packed. You know, you're getting elbowed right and left. People are just stripping down, trying things on. I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's sort of like, all right, well, it's Boston, so why wouldn't you want to spend some money? So I got a few things, and got out of there and ended up, just getting back to my hotel. Yeah. And just getting settled. And, you know, I went to years ago, I was in Boston for grad school, and then a little bit at post grad school. So I still had friends in the area, and I was able to see a good friend of mine for dinner on Friday, and then another good friend of mine Saturday morning. So and was able to do one of my little shakeout runs on a running trail that anytime I go to Boston, I try to hit this trail. It's called the Minuteman Trail. So it's just a beautiful place to run. So got to do a little bit of a shakeout run there. But had a little moment of panic, Brian, because I got to my hotel. I open up my bag and I'm looking around. I'm like, where are my running shoes? I mean, of all the things, I had packed gels. I had packed tablets. I had packed salt shoes. I had packed, you know, gloves if it got cold, hats if it got cold. But I didn't have my running shoes. So I completely freaked out.
Oh my gosh.
And God bless my wife. I called her in an absolute state of panic. And she's like, seriously? Boston? And you, never mind. So she raced home, grabbed my shoes, which I had left right at the front door, and went over to FedEx. And a little bit of a pricey expense to overnight them to me, but it got there on Saturday morning, so my stress level plummeted.
So the question I had for you after you told me that story was, why didn't you just buy new shoes if it costs that much to send the shoes via FedEx? That's
do I have to answer that question? I think a couple of things. One, I didn't want yes, I could have went out and bought some shoes, but I think it would have been, and I probably would have been fine, but it would have been in my head of, oh my God, these aren't broken in. Is that a blister? And I just would have had a different mindset for the race. And that's the last thing I wanted.
No, that's absolutely right. I probably would have leaned towards doing that too. Okay. So I flew in, I took a red eye. I changed my flight. So we were supposed to arrive on Saturday, but we changed our flights to do a red eye on Friday night and arrive Saturday morning just to get more time within the city. Our flight was delayed slightly, but we landed around 7-ish in the morning. Hotel wasn't ready, so we just dropped off our bags in Cambridge and then headed down to the expo ourselves. And then that's where we were walking from. We took the train down from Kendall MIT, that red line stop, and then we were walking from there, and then that's where we saw Missy on the Harvard Bridge. So Missy, you look tired though. When I saw you, I think we were all pretty tired so seeing each other at that time. But you're right, so leading on to the expo, I just thought that thing was like a zoo. Like I didn't realize like the queue lines, like go from going outside to inside, and then they have you going around like just in a big giant room, like going back and forth. So I know, Missy, you warned me about that, but I didn't realize it, obviously, until you see it, that giant Disneyland queue. And then, Tim, you're right about, like, we're trying on clothes, and then, like, there's so many people, like taking off their shirts, and then they're elbowing you as they're, like, changing. And then people have these huge backpacks because there's, you know, they haven't checked in their hotels yet. And then they're like, I just thought it was painful. So, but it was fun. It was so electric, I think, in that expo. So I got to ask you guys. So, Missy, what did you buy, or did you buy any clothes at the expo?
I bought the quarter zip, the cream one that I think you guys have. And then I also bought a crew neck sweatshirt, like in that same color.
Yeah.
And I totally just guessed my sizing because, like you guys said, it was crazy. And trying things on was like next to impossible. So you basically just take it and hope for the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim, what'd you get?
Well, I also got the cream colored quarter zip, and a couple of short sleeve t-shirts and a long sleeve t-shirt. And yeah, I think, you know, I bought less than I thought I was going to. A couple of years ago, I really did go berserk and pretty much try to buy the entire store. But not this time. It was, I was content with just a few things. I did hold myself back. Yeah.
Oh man. It would be easy, like, to just go crazy.
I think my credit card limit probably held me back. That's probably what.
There you go. You know. Well, I did like that quarter zip. I thought it was going to be warm, like putting on, but it was actually like surprisingly cooler than I thought it would feel like. Although it is warm because it's a little fleecy, but it doesn't feel as warm as like I guess I thought I would have felt being in it. So I got that. And then my wife got me she got me that. And I got a hat and a shirt, and I got to get a pint glass. So I always get a pint glass. So my wife got me that too. But yeah, I didn't spend, we didn't get too much, but I think it was easily could have. And then we headed down in the same area. My sister-in-law, Christine, she's part of an event planning committee, a group company that does events for Nike. So I headed down to the Nike store, my wife and I did, and we met Christine there. And then it was cool. I know Nike's not a sponsor of the marathon, but they did have some cool, like, Boston themed swag. And they did have some events lined up. And Christine also told us, like, leading into the next day, about the Nike Shakeout Run. And so let's talk about now Shakeout Runs. So before Tim and I talk about our experience, so Missy, what did you do on that Sunday morning in terms of a Shakeout Run? Did you do anything, or where did you run, or did you run?
My sister Marcy is also a runner, so we essentially did, I think we ended up doing close to a 3 mile run. So because we stayed on the Cambridge side, we started in Cambridge, kind of went by the water, past MIT, like across the bridge, and then ran on that side, and then kind of took the other bridge back. So I think all in all, it was probably a 3 mile loop.
Okay. There's definitely, I remember walking by the Kendall MIT down to the expo, and so many fast runners were out there that day.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Okay. So it sounds like it was a good experience then, just doing that and running along the Charles and everything.
Good experience. Yeah. And I will say, staying in Cambridge is actually a pretty good location because you could actually walk everywhere you needed to walk to. So the expo you could walk to. Even the starting line to get to the bus you could walk to. So not a bad location, and it's probably just slightly quieter on that side.
Yeah. All right, Tim, our Shakeout Run. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. So like you said, Christine had invited us to the Nike event, which was just south of the expo on Tremont Street, the Heartbreak Hill Running Company. And I was excited just because I hadn't seen you yet. And yeah. So it was good to, you know, I was looking forward to seeing you. And then really, I didn't have any idea what to expect at the event, but all of a sudden we're there, and then they check us in, and they say, well, hey, we're going to have pacers for you. But to kick us off, here's Joan Benoit, who I remember, you know, vividly from growing up and watching the 84 Olympics. And she won the inaugural women's Olympic marathon. It's just that that wonderful memory of her entering the LA Coliseum and taking the gold. So seeing her, just such an icon in running, that was awesome. And then Brian, you and I got together, but Nike put on a great event. I mean, they had shoes you could, you know, try on. You had a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, we got some free swag, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was really cool. And I know Christine had mentioned this, but I kind of missed it. Was like, she told me like maybe a week or so ago, oh, maybe bring some old shoes and then you can like swap them out. But so Missy, they were doing like, if you were wearing like, let's say old Brooks or something, and they would give you like a new pair of a Nike if you, and she mentioned that to me once, and it went in out here at the other. And I should have reminded Tim about that, and because we could have gotten new Nike shoes if you wanted to give some up. So
Brian, at that point I was so paranoid about running shoes, I don't think I would have taken them off. So it's just like I would have slept with my running shoes on, like they're not going anywhere.
Oh man, I would have brought an older pair, like one I knew I was going to, like, you know, go into the donation bin at a local store. But I wish I remembered that. And they also gave out free Nike orange t-shirts, Missy, so you might see a picture of me and Tim wearing one of those. And they had like a photo booth, and it was a really cool experience. I'd never been to that running company before, but they look like, you know, they got a lot of good stuff in there. What did we do after, Tim? We had a cup of coffee just to regroup, and then
we walked up to the finish line marathon.
Yeah,
and we walked up just to get a couple of pictures. But Brian, I felt the closer I got to the finish line, the more I was messing with race day mojo, and like, you know what? I need to stop where I'm at, because all the forces, all the vibes are saying, don't get any closer.
Yeah.
So
we were like a block away, like in front of the Boston Public Library. What was that? The Copley T entrance?
Copley Square. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were kind of waiting around there, Missy, and we chose not to go under the finish line. So but that was cool. Okay, so that Sunday we did our shakeout runs. I know Missy, you and I kind of did similar things but separately. You went to the Red Sox game as
yep.
well. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
What'd you think about that? Like, just, you know, quickly on Fenway.
I loved it.
Yeah.
It's so historic. Fans are great over there. So different than going to watch the Giants play in different ways, but definitely great experience. I think the one complaint, if anybody had a complaint, was that I think we're so spoiled with the food options when we see Giants games, that this is like true baseball food when you go to Fenway, right? It's literally like hot dog, a slice of pizza, drinks, etc. So I think that was the only complaint if anything, but everybody that I was with loved it.
Yeah. I thought it was a really cool stadium. We entered in the backside near kind of the bleachers, kind of in that area, but they have like a little nice segmented area there. I just thought it's a really beautiful stadium. I had gone there maybe 20 years ago and I went back again, and yeah, it was cool. We went just to the top deck, and we honestly only stayed for an inning, but we had some great views and, you know, good sight lines, and saw the first pitch. And I think it was Meb, the 2014 Boston Marathon winner, who threw out the first pitch. And but my wife and I only stayed technically. We only stayed for one inning, and then because we had a lot going on that day, so we left early, and then headed back and got some lunch at Regina Pizzeria, and then headed then to town to do some more sightseeing. How long did you stay at the game, Missy?
We actually stayed through the seventh inning stretch. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, and then just walked back from there.
Okay, okay. And then any more sightseeing that day, or was that just kind of it?
Yeah, that was pretty much it, because the goal was to get back to a restaurant on the Cambridge side. Like, mm-hmm. we had an early dinner reservation, so it kind of worked out perfect. After the seventh inning stretch, we just walk directly there to the restaurant.
Okay. Yeah. And I think I told you guys via chat, we actually did, my wife and I did a little bit more sightseeing. So we went down to see the Freedom Trail in the North End-ish area. And then we went to the Paul Revere House and did some walking around the North End. And then we went into the Union Oyster House because I'd gone there 20 years ago to check it out. But there were, as I was telling you guys, there were some people there having some beers who were runners. So they must be seasoned. if that's what they like to do. But I just thought it was a little, for me, I wouldn't do that. But, some people are different. But that just felt like a little crazy to do the day before a race. I'm sure they weren't getting hammered or anything, but I was just kind of shocked by that. So, day of race. So we met in the Boston Common. That was kind of a zoo, but it was really an organized chaos to get you on the bus. Tim, what did you, I know you've done that before, but mm-hmm. I guess it's as organized as can be to shuffle all these runners in an area, dropping their bags off and getting them on a bus.
Yeah.
Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually was a little surprised it took us as long as it did to get onto the bus. A couple of years ago, I as soon as I was in security, I felt like, 2 minutes later, I was on a bus. So I was a little surprised at how long it was taking them to load, but maybe we just hit it at that point in time. The number of buses versus the number of runners who were lining up. But as you said, we got on the bus and we made it out to, it's a long ride out to Hopkinton. It's like, 45, at least 45 minutes.
Yeah.
But I sat next to you, Brian, and we were just kind of chatting a little bit, and I was chatting with a runner next to me who was her 16th Boston Marathon. So she was all fired up. So yeah, it was good. It was a nice ride.
Yeah. It is further away than I thought it was going to be. And it did take longer. And you had mentioned this, Tim, because obviously we're in wave four, but you don't really have that much time in the staging area in Hopkinton. Like, I remember doing New York with you, and we're like sitting around for like 3-4 hours. Mm-hmm. And in Boston, I think the way they do it is you're there like only like maybe an hour before your time. And then, doing like if you need to use restroom, if you need to you don't have a lot of time. And
no,
I didn't expect that. Yeah, I guess I kind of thought that it would be more organized too, but it seemed like we happened to catch, I don't know if you guys, if it felt like this to you, Tim and Missy, but we felt like we caught like one of the last buses to leave. So, the commons. So, okay, staging area. Missy, what did you think about that? I guess it was fine. Like in that area, nothing too. Yeah, too crazy.
Yeah. Nothing too crazy. Yeah.
It's just that you have a mile walk to the start line.
Yeah. Which it's a ways. Yeah.
I didn't expect that either. I remember I was trying to take a picture with you and you're just like, well, we have so much time. And I was like, oh, now I get it. So like, it's still so far away. Okay. So we were all wave three of the fourth corral. And so Tim, let me ask you about this. Mm-hmm. I didn't get to ask you about this, but that felt like that was so crushed too. Like I felt like we left at a good time, but I don't know. What do you, was it?
Yeah.
Nice at the past?
It was, well, in the past, I've run it once before, so I don't know really think I can say I'm the expert, but, I think, maybe if we had, I did look back, we left it, our start time was 11:15. We left the Athletes Village at 10:45. I did notice that they actually started opening it up at 10:30, or at least you could start walking there by 10:30. So I think we just, we probably, if we had maybe left a little earlier, I guess in retrospect, we probably missed a little bit of a traffic jam towards the end. But we got up there, and I think what still is amazing to me about the starting area is just how small it is. When you think about Boston, it's just a 2-lane road, and you're at the start of the Boston Marathon. So I don't know about you guys. My heart rate at that point was just, my adrenaline was surging. My heart rate was going through the roof. I was excited. I'm like, let's go. I want to get this marathon underway.
Yeah. Yeah. it seemed very low key in terms of the start line. Usually I'm used to seeing start lines having like an awning above, you know, that you kind of run under, but I remember it was just like a post of where you start. But I think that's just Boston. It's low key, but so many people were fired up. People were excited to run across it. But we just kind of got jammed into Corral 3 on the side. And I think we all ended up starting maybe like 5 or 6 minutes late from that whole thing. But I don't know. I felt like being in a corral early and like maybe doing mm-hmm. some stretches, but I just couldn't, it was hard to do that, I guess.
Yeah.
In that, the way it was all kind of set up. So yeah. Missy, any thoughts there on that?
No, I agree with it. What yeah. you guys are saying. It was a little crammed at the beginning.
Okay. So starting off, we start in the city of Hopkinton, and I don't have all the cities down on the top of my head, but we started and I just felt like within the first mile, it was a little warm. So Missy, I'll ask you, what do you think about that?
I'm laughing because I agree with you.
It was a little warm. Yeah.
It's funny because I think about it and I can't decide if actually this took a toll more on me or the Honolulu hot humidity. It almost seemed in some ways like I couldn't get over the heat for the Boston Marathon more than in Honolulu. And I don't know why. So I agree. It was hot from the beginning.
I want to, like, we did Honolulu together, but I want to say, yes, it did feel warm, but I think it was because we started at 5 a.m. in Honolulu. Right. I don't know. I just felt like maybe psychologically you kind of know you're going to end, you know, by 10 at the latest. So I don't know. Maybe it's the later start time also, because we started at 11:15 locally.
Yeah.
Which was hot. So, I mean, I felt it within like the first mile. I was sweating more than I guess I normally would after a mile being out on the course, like running for a mile. So, okay. Tim, was this hotter than you thought, or was this kind of warmer than you thought? I mean, are we California runners soft for sure?
No, not at all. You know, the weather had been something that I was checking, and it seemed like even 48 hours before race day, it just kept, you know, one day it would say a high of 68 and the next day it would be high of 61. And so it just never could seem to, I never could seem to kind of decide what it was going to be. So I actually stopped checking the weather because I just was like, look, whatever the weather is going to be, it's going to be. But I remember, like you, Brian, I was about mile 2, mile 3, and I was like, I'm sweating more than I usually do about mile 2, mile 3. So I could feel it. And I could also, maybe it's just something about just the April sun in Massachusetts, but I just felt like it was also kind of reflecting off of the street or the road that we were on. I was feeling the heat coming up from the asphalt. I don't know about you guys, but it just seemed like that was, you know, reflecting back onto me. And that was also a challenge.
Yeah. And I agree. And there was some shade sometimes in the beginning. And then mm-hmm. like, you're running through forest
yeah.
setting. But like once you hit like more of the cities, that the shade was like less and less. And mm-hmm. I did feel that like it would, I felt like it was coming up like from above and below.
Yeah.
The heat.
Every now and then I'd get a cool breeze, like at my back. And I'd just think, oh, that just please keep that going. But it never was consistent. It would just be kind of it would just mess with you. It would be like, oh, it's going to get cold. No, it's not.
That tailwind never,
no.
I felt like that tailwind was never consistent. So there was some tailwind, but yeah, it wasn't like, I guess I thought it was going to be much more so. So I don't remember all of the cities on the course, but I think like, you know, Hopkinton and then was it Framingham?
Natick.
Natick, okay. Natick, do I have that right? Natick or?
Yep, Natick, yeah.
Okay. Before we get to Wellesley, because I think that's about the halfway point, any highlights from that first segment of the Boston Marathon, running through kind of those cities? Anything stand out to you guys there? It was kind of just, I felt like it was obviously the warmth, but I think we're going to Hopkinton here it is. Hopkinton, Ashland, Framingham, Natick, and then Wellesley. I just kind of felt like those first few miles, beautiful area, but yeah. Nothing too crazy. Okay, let's go to Wellesley then, which was Wellesley College. I thought that was fun that you were right, Tim. I think all the co-eds are out kind of cheering us on. They had some great signs out there. Any signs that stood out to you, Tim, from your perspective?
You run better than my ex who runs from commitment.
Oh,
oh man. I was telling my wife this one. I saw a really good one that I just it said, I may have butchered it, but it said, kiss me. Oh, some girl was holding this up from in Wellesley, said, kiss me, I like DILFs.
God.
Oh my God. I was just like, oh my God, that's just crazy.
This is a family podcast, right, Brian?
Yes. But like, would you want to get a kiss from a, like, first of all, if you're a girl, like, you're not going to give like some sweaty person a smooch on the cheek, and like, oh my God, that's just, so I tried to steer clear of that. I was like running in the middle of the street. but they were loud kind of in that area, so that was really cool. And then shortly after Wellesley, you start, I guess, the four infamous Newton Hills. I think I have that right.
Yeah, well, actually, let me ask you guys this. What did you think of the downhills? I mean, there's a particularly hard one at around 14 that you go on a pretty steep decline. How are the downhills for you?
I think maybe I didn't notice. Now that you said that, I noticed. Now I remember that downhill, because after you hit Wellesley College, right, mm-hmm. you have a slight downhill. I guess that didn't. It didn't bother me yet, but I know what you're going, because I think it started to bother me later when I got more of the downhills, but that point, it didn't bother me quite yet. And I didn't feel it as much in my quads at that time, but I don't know. Missy, what do you think about that?
No, I agree. Cause Tim, I don't know if it was the article you sent us, but I know that in something it had said, you actually have to watch out for the downhills just as much as you have to watch out for like running up the hills. So yeah. I think it did impact me too, on top of the heat also.
Yeah. Let's talk about the hills and then we'll talk about the some of the downhills. But so Tim, I know the Newton Hills, I think, are famous for being like difficult, but I think there's like four small hills mm-hmm. or three small hills that kind of go together. You've run that before. Before we did this race, but those are kind of killer. I mean, you they're like slow gradual, but they also like they're painful at the same time, because I felt like they just kept on going. But I don't know. What do you think about kind of those hills? I can see why they're there.
to break us down. I think mentally, you know, they're coming. So, you know, at the halfway point, I am like, don't go too fast. Keep the energy, because Newton is at the hill start at mile 16. And the first one is kind of gradual. It's the one you go over an overpass over, route 95, route 12895, Boston. That's the first hill, which you feel. And at that point at 16, it's like, okay, this is starting to feel like a lot of work. But for me, it just really is almost like somebody just, you know, smacked you in the face a little bit when you come down and you have to make a right turn at a firehouse and you go on to Commonwealth Ave, because at that point you've pretty much been running straight. You haven't made any hard rights or hard lefts, but you make your first hard right on the Commonwealth, and that's the first hill that mm-hmm. you see, which is about a quarter mile up. And I forget the name of the hill, but that's where I was like, oh boy. this is about to get hard.
So I was just reading this. So the longtime race director, Dave McGillivray, mm-hmm. he said he thought that the course's most difficult hill is the one crossing at the mile 16 point, which I think you were saying.
Yeah.
Right. Is that the first one? Is that the first?
That's one? Technically it's the second one, but it's the first one. I think you really, you see visually, I mean, you can feel the first one, you're kind of going an overpass, but when you make that right on the Commonwealth, that's the one where it's because all of a sudden it's just, you turn and boom, it's there.
Yeah. Is that where you're running by that hospital, right, too? Or do I have that?
At that point, I just was like, get one foot in front of the other. I wasn't noticing much else.
Yeah. Okay. It just felt like from mile 15 to mile 20, 21, it was just like hill, little small reprieve, and then another hill, and then another small reprieve, and then, you know, it was painful. Okay. Heartbreak Hill. And I can see now why people call it that. It's an ascent over 0.4 miles between miles 20 and 21 as you're coming up to Boston College. It's the last of the four noon hills. But that was painful too. And I tried to run most of it.
That's amazing, Brian.
But, you know,
that is, I had kudos to you.
Yeah, that is, I walked it. So that is amazing, Brian.
Well, I don't know about amazing, but I tried to run more of it than I could, but it was hard. But I remember seeing that sign on the top of the Heartbreak Hill, and that was great to finish that point. So, or at least finish that hill, I should say. So, Missy, what did you think about any of those hills or anything on Heartbreak?
So I think by that point, right, I had very little energy. I know I was like texting at every mile to my family, and I'm like, I'm half dead by this point. I definitely walked it. And I think when I was walking it, there was quite a few people walking it as well. So I felt a little bit better, but there was no way I could have run that at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, at that point, at 14, I was, you know, my ankle was starting to give me fits, and I would try to walk for about a minute or so, and it just was not, it was getting worse, and I'm just was like, all right, well, it's time to embrace the suck and just get yourself across the finish line, whether you have to walk, run, or, you know, have someone carry you. It's Boston. So yeah, for me, it was just like, get over Heartbreak and see if you can just kind of maybe try to jog it into to the end. But like you, Brian, it's, you know, it's a tough hill. It's at, you know, the point in the marathon, any marathon, where you're hitting the wall, you're depleted of energy, and you're just trying to get over it. But then you hit Boston College, and I think those students are, you know, just as good, if not better than Wellesley, just because they're pushing you along at such a tough, tough point in the race.
Yeah. And they're more intense than the Wellesley folks.
Yes.
I'd also suspect they might've been drinking a little bit.
Probably. But it was cool. I was trying to keep it even keel and just kind of run down the center. But, you know, a lot of those kids just were out there screaming. I'm guessing for like, I felt like a mile. They were just there and didn't leave. So kudos to those students at both Wellesley and BC, Boston College, for coming out there. But you're coming down the hill, right? So, Tim, you were talking about the downhills. So I remember you hit the top of Heartbreak Hill, and then I think that's when you start the decline, right, to go back into Boston. And then so I remember seeing that was probably mile 21 ish when I saw that sign, you're at the top of BC,
yeah,
heading back. And I think that's when I really started to feel it, like in my quads at that point. So yeah, that was pretty painful. Did you have a problem, Missy, with the downhills too?
No, I mean, I just think everything just blurred together related to the heat. So uphill, downhill, everything. I think it was just more the heat in my mind was just causing this block for me.
Yeah. I saw an Instagram story about some person probably on the Heartbreak Hill area who was out there cheering, and it said, oh, it's hot today or something like that. And it's hot out here to cheer, you know, for these runners.
Oh, I think the one thing, by the way, that saved me was the fact that they had the water stations every mile, which is unusual. Not every marathon has it every single mile. So right. That was the hero.
Yeah. And I love getting like Twizzlers or Red Vines, and some kids out there had them out there. Yep. So I want to say thanks to anyone who was giving out free snacks, because I definitely took some of those Red Vines kind of along the way.
I think I also need to give a shout out to anyone who took their garden hose and was just spraying it up in the air. I was always running over that. Oh, so that I guess, so you know, nice. Yeah, that was just a nice little way to cool off.
100% agree.
Oh, man. Okay. So coming into Boston, I was pouring water over myself, just like I know Missy, you were too, but yeah. Like from starting probably from mile one or two.
Yeah.
So my shirt was soaked. It was like a weird drying wetness throughout the whole time. But I don't know. I felt like, I guess once you crossed over down into Brookline, I think that's like the final like 3 or 4 miles. I think you started getting like a wind. And yes. So I started feeling cold also at the same time. So I was like, oh man, what a day. but yeah. All right. So wrapping up, I guess, as we're coming back into town. So you're in Brookline. It's a city next to Boston. That's the last 3 to 4 miles. So you're leaving Boston College. And I don't remember some of these streets, but is that Commonwealth you're running down there too, Tim?
See, when you come off of Heartbreak, you run down the hill and you run into Cleveland Circle. And at that point, you are on, I want to say Beacon, but I'm not 100%. But then you run through, as you said, Brookline, and you come up to, all I can see is the CITGO sign, and it's just, it just seemed like it was so far away. So for me, it was just like, just head down, one foot in front of the other, you know, see what you can do. And you run through Kenmore Square, which is, at that point you're officially in Boston.
Yeah.
And so I remember running through Kenmore Square, and the crowd had come out from the Red Sox game. And then all of a sudden I looked down and they had painted on, so they had logos on the street, and it said 1 mile to go. I'm like, okay, I'm going to finish. So I remember that. Okay. That's, you know, bring it home. That was all I kept thinking was bring it home.
That was so hard, that last mile. And I remember seeing that sign, and I was not going to stop. Even if I was going to run slow, I was not going to, I felt like I was not going to walk that last mile. And, cause I had been walking kind of a lot, I think for my mentally, I felt like I'd been walking a lot. So I wanted to make sure that last mile I was not stopping. And, but that was really cool. And I remember, Tim, you've kind of mentioned, what's that, right on Hereford, which you're making?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was playing in my mind, too, as we're kind of like wrapping up towards the end, like passing Kenmore Square and two. But, you know, that one little dip under the freeway.
I hated like, that part.
I was just like, oh, my God. It was like the last mile.
One
little dip. Yeah. So, okay. But, yeah, it was I we all finished.
Well, can I ask? So yes, if I could back you up. So yeah, so the famous saying is right on Hereford, left on Boylston. And I just kept, when we came up from that little dip, that's where in my head, I'm like, you know, like you, Brian, I'm like, I'm not going to walk the last mile. I'm going to run. I don't care what I feel, but I just kept thinking as soon as I got up to that dip, I'm like, this is the moment. This is the moment when you're going to finish the Boston Marathon. So for me, as soon as I got on Hereford Street, it was just loud. And then coming up and making the left on Boylston Street, it just seemed like both sides of the street were just packed with people. And the finish line also looked exceptionally far away. But I'd love to hear what your experiences were coming up that last little bit, Hereford to Boylston.
I'll go first. So we've done Honolulu together, and that I felt like we were looking at the finish line for at least 2 miles. You know, like finishing Honolulu, coming back from Diamond Head to finishing in the park. And I felt like even though this wasn't 2 miles, it felt like that right turn on Boylston that left turn on Boylston.
Left turn, yeah.
That left turn on Boylston, that felt like 2 miles to me. Like, it felt so far. Oh my gosh. But I don't, Missy, what do you think about that?
I'm laughing because I agree. Like, I could barely see the finish line when I made the turn. So it did feel like it was super far. I think I was distracted because my family had told me where they were standing. And so I was trying to find them. So that distracted me for a little bit, but I still felt like I had a long way to go to get to the finish line after that.
Did you see your family?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah.
And Marcy got a picture of me. So thank you, Marcy, for finishing that. So I guess we'll wrap that up. That right on Hereford, left on Boylston, and then it's probably another quarter mile maybe on Boylston to the finish line. But that was once I finished it, I was telling Tim at dinner, I felt like I was a little emotional kind of at that point. Like, one, I had done this race of a lifetime, and then I felt like this was like one of the hardest things I'd done in my life. But it was intense. Tim, what do you think, or any thoughts on finishing kind of this race despite some of the challenges you had during the race here?
I just felt like, pinch me, I'm running down Boylston Street to finish the Boston Marathon. So it felt just almost surreal. And for me, you know, if you had asked me several years ago, would you ever be able to do Boston? I'm like, well, yeah, I'd love to do Boston, but I don't think it's ever going to happen. So to be able not only to do it once, but then to be up and do it and share it with all three of us could share it. That was just, it's just an amazing feeling when you're running down Boylston and you cross that finish line and they hand you the medal that says Boston Marathon on it. So, which I'm looking at right now. So that's something that I'll always, you know, I will never forget. It was once in a lifetime.
And are you wearing your jacket, Tim? Because it seems like that's what everyone does, that you have to wear the jacket too.
As soon as I got my bag, I put it right on.
Yes, exactly. It almost seems like that's more important than the medal to a lot of people.
Yes.
Oh man. No, I the same way. I didn't have my jacket. Obviously, I know I told you guys I left it here. So I wore that cream colored thing for days until, you know, I got back into town. And so I wore it on Monday and then Tuesday flying back into California. But I just put on the jacket. Like, we had a running group yesterday. So of course I had to wear it to my running group. I had a few people like, I have a good friend, Mark. So he was kind of like snickery at me, like, why are you wearing that thing? You know, like, but no, it was good. It was good. I'm glad it was amazing. So, but I love that jacket. It does feel good, nice and soft. Okay. Missy, any final thoughts, like from the finish line, getting to where you needed to go after, like, how was your finish experience? Any kind of thoughts from there?
So I know I had dropped off my gear on Saturday, right? Because we had run with the Race for Rehab team for Spalding Rehabilitation. And so we were all supposed to end up at the Mandarin, right? And so I know that Risa had said on the Zoom calls, you guys have to practice going from the finish line to the Mandarin. And when I had seen her on Saturday, she actually said that again. She said, hey, try to practice it. So we actually practiced it. And thank goodness I did, because it actually made it easy for me to get back to the Mandarin. Because I understand what she's saying is sometimes you could actually get disoriented and kind of get confused on how to get back to the Mandarin, because it's not that easy. And so I thought that the going from the finish to the Mandarin was fine, only because she had reiterated to me, practice getting to the Mandarin.
How did you get to the Mandarin?
So what's funny is that she, because I saw her on Saturday, she said, hey, Missy, there's two ways to go. If you don't care about the food, like, cut right at the first chance you get. Otherwise, you keep going on, right? And then there's all the snacks, et cetera. So I did what she said, and I just cut right after I got the medal. And it kind of essentially just made it really easy to do kind of a square loop to get to that Prudential Center CPK, like, entrance.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. I felt that walk was so long though, and I'm sure it wasn't, but mentally I felt that finish because I had to get my bag, right? So getting my bag and then finding Jen and then getting to the Mandarin. I felt like that was just so long. That was such a long trek. I mean, I read the notes of where to go, but I think there were just so many people. It still took forever to get there.
But at least you didn't have to hop on a bus, Brian, right? So that's the win.
That's true.
No smelly bus.
Oh, man. So Jen was telling me also while she was waiting for me in the family section, she told this to me and Tim, that a person right next to her started getting like sick and was like about on the verge of passing out, and then was able to flag Jen. And then Jen was able to get like somebody in a wheelchair to get to this person, because I think this person started vomiting and started passing out like incoherently. And so
it was only speaking Spanish. And so thank God Jen, who is fluent, was able to translate and get the guy the help that he needed.
Yeah. So that was crazy. She was kind of telling me about all that. Okay. So the Spalding event. So that was cool. I know I saw your family there, Missy, and you know, Jen came there too. And that was a great event. They had some really good food, really good drinks. But I think by the time we got there, I think it was starting to wrap up, because I think, you know, we were on the latter side of things. So what did you think about that, Missy?
I think it was very well run. The thing that I appreciated the most was the fact that we were able to use the spa facilities, right, to take a shower, because that's a huge win. Just to be able to take a shower, change, and then go back down and eat. So I think Risa and her team did a phenomenal job on that whole event. I know that my family really enjoyed it there, and they kind of said to themselves, man, we shouldn't have had lunch, because the food was actually better at the Mandarin than their lunch was. So I think it was well run.
Yeah. Hear. I would agree. I think I just couldn't eat like myself after the race. Like I'm not one of those who likes to eat right after, but I thought it was really well done. They had some good drinks. I couldn't even finish my beer when I was there. So it takes me a while to get like back into the flow of things, but it looked like it was fun. They had pictures. Mm-hmm. Missy, you and I took a picture together, and then my wife and I took a picture together, like in front of that photo booth. But it was a really cool experience to do all that. So thank you, Tim.
Thank you, Tim.
For that.
No, thank you. Thank you, guys. I'm just thrilled that you got to experience it. I got thrilled that you got to experience Boston. So you were absolutely more than welcome.
Okay, let's wrap this up by just talking about our post-race dinner. Looks like you went to a really cool place, Missy, with your family.
So we had ended up across the street from the Mandarin at, I think it's called Abe and Louie, so a steakhouse. So I think the food was good. It was just that it was packed with all the runners, so the service was a little bit on the slower side, but I would imagine that's to be expected at a lot of the places around there.
Yeah. Did you actually have a steak there? Or
I did. I had a bone-in ribeye. How embarrassing.
Wow.
I know.
Oh, boy. That's intense.
Oh, my gosh.
I think I can only eat like a couple slices out of that thing. Oh, man. Well, Tim and I, we went to Sansi Cafe. great experience.
Yeah. I think, you know, first of all, it was for me, you know, I had to obviously I spent a little time in the medical tent after the race, but was able to get, you know, back to my hotel and cleaned up, but wearing my jacket on Newbury Street, you know, waiting for Brian and Jen. I mean, so many people were just coming by and saying congrats or high-fiving me or whatnot, but when we walked into Sansi, a lot of people started applauding. So that was pretty cool.
That's embarrassing, but also cool at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more.
The food was good. You know, no issues with the food. I just, you know, Tim and I told you, Missy, we ordered martinis. That's kind of like a post-race tradition, and I haven't had a martini, and I don't think Tim, you've had a martini. I haven't had one since New Year's, And I wanted to get one at the Super Bowl, but obviously that didn't happen.
We don't need to talk. Let's not talk about that.
But they served our martinis in like these plastic glasses. College plastic glasses. And I'm sure that was just kind of everything that was going on for the day. Like, you know, runners are going to break things and they need that. But it made the taste of the martini a little bit different. it was fun. It was great. So, dinner was fine. Any thoughts on dinner, Tim? Food?
Like you, I don't, you know, have much of an appetite after a marathon. So I sort of picked up my food and, it didn't until the day after around 4 o'clock, all of a sudden I'm like, I am starving. And you know, and ended up just like, I was at the airport and ended up just like eating an enormous burrito. But so it was fine. But it was, you know, Brian, it was, for me, it was more so getting to hang out with you post Boston, hanging out with Jen, walking, you know, and getting a picture taken at the finish line one last time. That to me was that was the high point.
Yeah. And then kind of to wrap it up, we also went to Abe and Louie's to try to see you, Missy, because we finished our dinner and we ended up having a Macallan in the bar area and met a really cool guy we were talking to for about 5 minutes, a high school track and field coach who also works at Cask and Flagon near Fenway. I think he was just working today and he was relaxing by having a steak at the bar at Abe and Louie. So we had a nice quick conversation with him. I honestly don't remember his name, but he was really friendly and, you know, congratulated us and everything, kind of like on all that. So it was a really cool experience there. Okay. I think that's it. Oh, last thing. Would you do this race again, Missy?
I think so. Yeah. It's an interesting race because I just felt like I was around greatness the whole weekend, right? And I didn't feel like I belonged, but I loved the atmosphere. I loved the fans cheering. It's just a weird thing, right? Yeah. Where I'm essentially in the back of the pack. So that's why I hesitated.
Yeah. No, I felt that same way too, but I would definitely do it again because I want to do better. But yeah, I would definitely do this one again. Tim?
I'm going to definitely echo Missy's sentiment. There are moments where I have not felt as self-conscious as I did since high school, being in Boston around some of the runners and going like, what do you do? Like, what do you eat that I'm not eating?
How do you do this? Like,
yeah.
How do you do you? Like,
is there some sort of amino acid group that I just don't get? Would I do it again? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we've talked about the race. We talked about how tough it was out there with the weather and the course, but just the atmosphere of the entire weekend is just, it's an amazing thing to be a part of. You're part of something. In my case, I certainly felt I was part of something that was just so much bigger than myself. And like Missy said, you feel like you're just around greatness. So
yeah,
that's a pretty amazing atmosphere to be in.
Yeah, it was really cool. I'll definitely do it again, but just give me some time to regroup. Maybe a couple of years from now, we'll fundraise again for it. But this time but that was awesome. Okay, last thing. Did you guys buy your pictures or are you guys buying any post-race swag that you didn't get at the expo that you wanted for the race? I just bought the pictures. I bought them all because how often am I going to have that? So I bought the whole thing, the $99 and all the photos and the video. So I decided to get it.
I'm going to do that too. They actually took quite a few pictures.
Yeah, so I have like over 100 pictures. And I felt like, oh, that's a really good deal.
Really good. Yeah,
for what it is. They took it like over. And my bib wasn't showing for a portion of it, so it was covered. But I think obviously they have sort of facial recognition technology. So all of them started popping up. Anything else you wanted to buy? Like another sweatshirt, shorts, sweats come up? No? Okay. I'm still looking. I think there's some stuff I want to get. Because I felt like I didn't
For me, I did Boston 2 years ago. I had my medal and number framed. So I don't know if you guys are going to do that, but I'm looking at it right now. But yeah, right now my 2024 medal is hanging right next to it. So I just hope you guys put it somewhere where, you know, you can always remember this experience.
I definitely will. I want to put this along with the New York and Chicago kind of together in a grouping. I'll kind of figure that out, but and then kind of wrapping it up, thanks to Marcy for the signs. So there's a sign that me and Tim are holding that Marcy made and gave to us, so thank you, Marcy, for that. And it was a great experience, Tim, and thank you for bringing us along on the journey. It was awesome.
Thank you, Tim.
My pleasure.
We'll wrap this up. So thanks again, everyone, for joining us today. And we'll talk again on this next episode of this podcast. So thanks again. Have a good day, everybody.